Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. This is AB Dauji, and this is the Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously from Durban studios of Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar. So, how are things going, eh? Ladies, what a relief now that the bullies are out of the house. Well, at least for some of you. Muggets got finished over the past 2 months or so, but shame. Some of them are still hanging around, not allowed to go back to work yet, sitting around, munching on this and that, and fattening the curve. And they're hanging around in their pajamas the whole day. Must be really irritating you. On the subject of irritation, my dear listeners, let me tell you this. I am extremely irritated today. Yes, extremely irritated, to the point of being angry, terribly angry. Actually, I'm angry for two reasons. But before I get there, let me ask you a personal question. I hope you don't mind. And I want you to think carefully and deeply before you answer, okay? Okay? Right? Here is the question. Do you feel prejudice against anyone? No. Don't answer that quickly. Be honest. No one else is listening except me, okay? Come close to your radio and whisper to me. Okay, let me take you back to the old days, and this is in respect of the Muslims of Indian origins here in South Africa. The old days, when a boy wanted to marry a girl, there sometimes arose a huge problem. Huge problem. Now, even today, I read all over the social media what Islam says and what our Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, that Muslims are all the same regardless of race, color, creed. We are proud to declare that. We are proud to declare that. That as Muslims we do not subscribe to the idea of prejudice, discrimination and so on. Abu Dar reported that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Behold, verily, you have no virtue over one with white skin or black skin except by favor of righteousness." So, all that matters, dear listeners, is that a person is virtuous, a person of good character, a person who does good deeds. So, in Islam, there must be no prejudice. But wait, hey, wait. Boy wants to marry girl. The family is approached. The answer, no, never. They are Urdu speaking, we are Mehmans, or we are Surtis, and they are Mehmans, and so on and so on. No. Forget it. No chance. Remember those days? Maybe it's still lingering, still happening today. I don't know. Funny thing is that either the girl or boy today cannot speak a word of the ethnic language, the Urdu or Gujarati or whatever. But no. Sorry, can't do. He's Urdu speaking. So what prejudice do you have? Do you look down on our black brothers and sisters in this country? No? Not even a teeny weeny little bit tucked away somewhere in your conscience, somewhere in some corner of your brain? What? You don't have even a hint of prejudice against anyone? Seriously? Okay, I'll just leave it there. You bunch of liars. Right, now let's analyze this. Say you did dislike some other group for no real rational reason except maybe that they're of the skin color or caste or something. Well, that is very bad. Very, very bad. But if it remains in your head and don't do anything about it, don't actively show or take action against those you dislike, then that is not a real problem. But remember that it is even bad to have bad thoughts, even prejudice against someone. Even if it remains in your head and you do nothing. We know here in South Africa the politics of hate. It was truly incredible prejudice, bigotry, racial discrimination was the law. So many white people hated the blacks openly. Discrimination was the policy. Apartheid. You know about that. The brutality of it. It was never disguised. So let me get to the two things that really got me riled up, very cross, and very, very irritated. Right. The first one is George Floyd's murder. And let me say this. As much as cell phones can sometimes be very irritating with people busy with their heads down, especially the younger people, and even older people, and people sending out 1 million messages, pictures, and jokes, and all over, over and over again, stale old ones that you already received 2 weeks ago, a few dozen. Now, but sometimes, cell phones can be very useful in providing important information. Perhaps the most beneficial use of cell phones has been its camera. Videos captured by ordinary citizens about acts of injustice and criminality. So many carrying out such acts of criminality could have gotten away had they not been video evidence clearly showing their actions. The whole world saw the clear act of murder. The cop put his knee on his neck for 8 minutes 45 seconds. The cop had his hands in his pocket, very relaxed, cool, while his friends held George down. And George says, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Please, sir. I can't breathe. Mom, help me. I can't breathe. Sir, sir, please, please, sir." And the life drained out of him. That was such a gruesome sight. It flashed through my mind how we hold a sheep down when we are making kurbani. And he was held down like an animal about to be slaughtered, killed. And the crowd watching this said, "Let him go, let him go. You're killing him, let him go. He can't breathe." But they didn't. And he died. And we saw him dying. Shocking beyond chilling, beyond belief, absolutely chilling. And it made me so cross and so sad. Woof, man's inhumanity to man. Such naked cruelty, such hatred. The entire world reeled in shock. Marches all over America and all over the world. Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. The message was clear. There is still prejudice, discrimination, racial hatred in the United States of America. So let me say it again. I was appalled, disgusted, horrified, sickened, angered by the blatant, unwarranted killing, the cold-blooded murder of George Floyd. So, read me correctly, folks. You know how I feel about that. So that is getting angry, part one. Now to part two. Why isn't the whole world just as angry about similar acts of brutality that's happening every day in so many parts of the world? Why is there not the same level of horror and revulsion at the cold-blooded murder of innocent civilians that's also captured on cell phone videos? I've really been thinking about this. Maybe I'll come up with some possible answers before the end of the program. So yes, Black Lives Matter. Racial prejudice is wrong, but the focus is on Black American Lives Matter. Black American Lives Matter. That's what gets me. What about all the other non-white? Remember that old term, non-white? Non-Caucasian people that America itself murdered. You know what really makes me mad? The Black American former President Barack Obama. He killed so many innocent civilians in far-off places with his program of drone attacks. When he first came on the scene, I thought, wow, here's a guy who comes from the other side, the underdog, the black man who's been discriminated against. And he's a bright guy, a university professor, Nofal. He gave a stirring speech in Cairo. I remember that. I was greatly moved by his words of caring and compassion and humanity. Turned out to be a smooth-talking fraud. And I'll say it clearly, a murderer, a war criminal. What's the difference between a cop killing a black man in the street and a black man killing civilians, innocent civilians, far away in foreign lands? Here's the speech he made to the young people demonstrating earlier this week. This is what he said. He said, I want you to know that you matter. I want you to know that your lives matter, that your dreams matter. And when I go home and I look at the faces of my daughters, Sasha and Malia, and I look at my nephews and nieces, I see limitless potential that deserves to flourish and thrive. Did you get that? Barack Obama said that earlier. I want you to know that you matter. I want you to know that your lives matter, that your dreams matter. And when I go home and I look at the faces of my daughters, Sasha and Malia, and I look at my nephews and nieces, I see limitless potential that deserves to flourish and thrive. Wow, eh? Wonderful stuff. Just to bring a small detail, a small detail to your attention, Mr. President. One of your drone strikes in Yemen hit a tribe with cluster munitions, killing 55 people. 21 were children, 10 of them under 5, 12 were women, 5 of them pregnant. So, Mr. Smooth Talker, what was it you said? That you look at the faces of your daughters, Sasha and Malia, and your nephews and nieces, and you see the limitless potential that deserves to flourish and thrive. What about the 21 children you killed in an attack in Yemen, and the unborn children to 5 of the pregnant women? What about the potential, their potential to flourish and thrive? No chance of that 6 feet below ground. No chance of that. Obama became president on January 20th, 2009. By the time he left office 6 years later, he had carried out 540 drone strikes that killed about 500 to 800 people. So, can someone tell me what's the difference between a cop killing a civilian by putting his knee on his neck and a bomb killing people attending a wedding? Attending a wedding, did you hear that? The Wichbachtu wedding party's airstrike refers to the killing of about 37 Afghan civilian, mostly women and children, and injuring about 2 others by United States military strikes on the 3rd of November 2008. The group was celebrating a wedding at a housing complex in the village of Wichbachtu, a Taliban stronghold in the Kandahar province of Afghanistan. Of the civilians, 23 were children, 10 were women, and 4 were men. Another 27 persons were injured, including the bride. The bombing destroyed the housing complex where women and children had gathered to celebrate. The victim and the families had no acknowledgement from President Obama or opportunity for justice. These include a strike in Pakistan at a bus depot in which 24 civilians were found to have been killed, and an attack on a wedding convoy in which at least 12 civilians were killed. So, dear listeners, excuse me when I felt a little bilious when I saw Barack Obama saying that black lives matter. I say to you, all lives matter. Did you get that? All lives matter. A cop was arrested for killing one man. You murdered hundreds, and you are free to go on TV and speak about humanity, about people, and about people thriving and flourishing. As I said, I felt bilious. But what really nearly made me vomit, I wanted to vomit, was when I saw the stupid face of George W. Bush. He also made a speech. And this is what he said on Tuesday in his speech. Those who set out to silence those voices do not understand the meaning of America or how it becomes a better place. America's greatest challenge has long been to unite people of very different backgrounds into a single nation of justice and opportunity. Let me read that again. Those who set out to silence those voices do not understand the meaning of America or how it becomes a better place. America's greatest challenge has long been to unite people of very different backgrounds into a single nation of justice and opportunity. I like this last words, a single nation of justice and opportunity. Here's my question to you, Mr. President. When you and your father dropped tons of bombs on Iraq, did you help that nation to achieve justice and opportunity? Today, that country is completely wrecked. One of the most advanced countries in the Middle East at one time, reduced to rubble, to ashes, struggling to survive. And you and your dad killed hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children. I bear testimony to this. You put your knee on that country just as the cop did to George Floyd. And you took its breath away. Here's a senior editor, a respected journalist who's been writing the New York Times, William Rivers Pitt. He says, Bush is a war criminal, a torturer, a smash-and-grab thief, a documented liar, and a pinnacle avatar of the racist white power state. People like him are responsible for entrenching all that is wrong with this country, and I want no part of his ideas on healing. There are some stains that can never, ever be removed. Tell your story walking, George. The bandage you are offering is already soaked in blood. Oof. How do you like that, eh? And here's the irony of it all. You, George Bush, took your powerful army of whites and black troops to kill the people of Iraq. White and black. For no reason whatsoever. For a lie, weapons of mass destruction. Lies. Whites and blacks went and bombed Iraq. One man stood up to say no to America's command to go out and kill people in faraway places. A great man, Muhammad Ali. He was the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. That mattered very little to him. On March the 9th, 1966, at the height of the Vietnam War, he was called up by the army to go and fight there in Vietnam. He refused. This is what he said. My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America. And shoot them for what? They never called me a nigger. They never lynched me. They didn't put no dogs on me. They didn't rob me of my nationality, rape and kill my mother and father. Shoot them for what? How can I shoot them poor people? Just take me to jail. Woo. Powerful stuff there. So while my heart was bleeding for George Floyd, as I saw him crushed by the knee of the cop, and as I saw thousands of people marching all over America and many parts of the world, I say it's not only black lives that matter. All lives matter. All lives that are discriminated against, all lives that are brutalized, they all matter. Where is the outrage from the world when the TV screens were full of scenes of brutality, of villages looted and burnt, children thrown into fires, women raped, thousands fleeing for their lives, dark people, the Rohingyas. Don't their lives matter? Don't the lives of the Uyghurs matter? You see all of this clearly, openly, but the world does sweet blow all. But there's one thing you won't see. There's one thing you won't see. Thousands of George Floyd subjected to racist attacks. There's a wall of silence around this brutality, this crime against humanity, this apartheid. The hell of George Floyd is played out every day, and the world turns a blind eye and a deaf ear to the call. To the call, we can't breathe. We can't breathe. Please help us. We can't breathe. But hear this, dear people. This one cry that is ignored by the world is the cry of the Palestinians. For 71 years, Israel has had its knee on the neck of the Palestinians. They have been suffocating. They can't breathe. Just as Israel has built the apartheid wall between the Jews and the Palestinians, so also it has built a very high wall of defense all around Israel so that no one can criticize it for the way in which it has been treating the Palestinians. I really don't know where to start about the horrible things that Israel is doing to the Palestinians every day. Did you hear that? Every day, go to the website. It's called International Middle East Media Center. IMEMC.org. IMEMC.org. International Middle East Media Center. Google it. And read what's happening there. Let me read to you right now. Right now. I just went to the website and this is what I found. I'm just going to read the headlines to you. Israeli settlers chop down dozens of olive trees near Nablus. Israel bans Sheikh Sabri from Al-Aqsa for 4 months. Israeli troops abduct many Palestinians across the West Bank. Weekly report on Israeli human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territory, 28 May to 3rd June. Israeli army escalates demolitions in South Hebron Hills. Several Palestinian structures demolished by Israeli army near Jericho. Dozens of Palestinian prisoners set to go on hunger strike. Israeli troops crack down on peaceful protests at home of Sheikh Sabri and the arrest too. Israeli settlers raise Palestinian land, meaning burn Palestinian lands, to build settler-only road. I can read all the stuff here. Headlines. Just from today. Armed Israeli settlers burn 350 dirhams of Palestinian-owned land, kick farmers off the land. Every day. Did you hear that? Every day. You won't see this on the international news. What you will see is that Israel is the victim and the Palestinians are the bad guys. Reminds me of that old John Wayne movies. Remember when the Red Indians were the bad guys, savages, and the white man was the civilized lot who merely came to take their land, America. Call it America. Palestinians are bad guys because people from Europe and elsewhere merely came to drive them out of their homes, terrorize them to leave their lands, and kill thousands of them. And the Palestinians, and the Palestinians actually had the cheek to resist them, eh? How could they? How could they? 71 years, the knee on their neck. And you are not allowed to see what's happening or criticize it. Israel kills with full impunity. No consequences. It killed peaceful protesters on the Mavi Marmara, a ship bound for Gaza with people who want to expose the truth. You want to hear about a George Floyd of Palestine? Do you? Okay, here's one. Here's one. With my Yumna Patel, this article. Not South African. Let me read to you this article from June the 2nd. In the living room of her home in the Wadi al-Jawz neighborhood of occupied East Jerusalem, a tired Ranad al-Halak sits between a sea of grieving family members, friends, neighbors, and strangers who have come to pay their respects. It's been 2 days since her only son, 32-year-old Iyad al-Halak, was gunned down by Israeli police in the old city of Jerusalem, where he was enrolled at a center for Palestinian adults and children with disabilities. In the hours since, she has relived the moment her son was killed over and over again, recounting the chilling tale of his slaying as told to her by one of the only eyewitnesses to the event, Iyad's school teacher. Iyad was born with autism, left his family's home in the early hours of Saturday morning to make his way to the Elwin Al-Quds Center less than 2 kilometers away. And this is what they say. Iyad always had a problem with calculating or remembering time. Renad, the mother, told the news site. So the second he would see the sun come up, he would think it was time to go to school. So that's what he did on Saturday. Typically, Iyad's mother or one of his two sisters accompanies him to school. On Saturday, however, because the family had the day off from work, they slept in late. But when they woke up to their phones ringing just around 6 a.m., they realized that Iyad was not at home and never made it to school. He was close to the school when the Israeli police started yelling at him to stop moving. That's what Renat, the mother, says. He was confused and scared and started to run away, she continued, adding that when the police started shooting their guns in the air, Iyad's teacher ran out towards him to try to stop the police. She saw what was happening and was yelling at the police to stop, saying that he has special needs. But they didn't stop and kept yelling, "Terrorists!" in Hebrew. Iyad allegedly became more fearful, tearing off his protective gloves and mask and handing them to his teacher before running away. He then hid behind a dumpster nearby and was curled up like a baby crying, "I'm with her! I'm with her!" referring to the teacher.
I'm with her. At the time I said nothing, but then I wrote this poem for this young gentleman. اسمحوا لي أن أتكلم بلساني العربي قبل أن يحتلوا لغتي أيضا. Allow me to speak my Arab tongue before they occupy
weapon that he had handed her to her. Oh, I can't read this anymore. I'm just getting all choked up here. So, what about all the other George Floyds killed while peacefully demonstrating at the Gaza fence? Young Israeli soldiers with high-powered rifles, with scopes, telescopes, shot at young Palestinians. What was the purpose to do that? To disarm them. Not that they had any guns or anything like that. No, to disarm them. And many hundreds were disarmed, literally. Lost one arm, or a leg, or an eye. Or were just murdered. You want to know of another Palestinian, George Floyd? Who remembers the name Razan Ashraf al-Najjar? Who remembers the name? Anyone? Let me remind you, exactly 2 years ago in June, young people were demonstrating at the Gaza border fence. Razan was a medical nurse, 20 years old, while providing first aid to injured Palestinians. And of course, she was clearly dressed in her white coat and was well known by the other side as a medic, as a nurse. An Israeli sniper shot her in the chest. She died, and 100 other Palestinians were wounded on that day. I can carry on for a whole month listening to you, the horrible crimes of Israel. But no one will speak at the knee. No one will speak about the knee on the neck of the Palestinian. And you are not allowed to compare it to what happened to George Floyd. Here is one response this week from Isaac Herzog. He's a leading Israeli left leader. Left supposed to be liberal. Left is supposed to be liberal. Isaac Herzog, a leading Israeli left leader and head of the Jewish agency, suggested that it was anti-Semitic to tie Israel's treatment of Palestinians to American racism. Oh. Isaac Herzog, a leading Israeli left leader and head of the Jewish agency, suggested that it was anti-Semitic to tie Israel's treatment of Palestinians to American racism. Did you get that? Right. That says it all. If you criticize Israel for what it does to the Palestinians, even if innocent civilians are killed, then you're an anti-Semite, anti-Jew, you see? And American politicians and media have been captured a long time ago, long time ago. It's an offense by law to criticize Israel in many states in America and university campuses also. Can lose their subsidies if they allow anti-Israel activity on campus. And professors can lose their jobs. And many have. Norman Finkelstein, many others. And you cannot become president unless you say the magic words, Israel is our friend and closest ally in the Middle East. And then the money from the Zionists, billionaires and millionaires in America will pour into your campaign to ensure that you become president. I've spoken about this many times before. It all makes me so cross. The sheer injustice of it all, the double standards. You want to hear something shocking? Okay, are you ready? There's a site called If Americans Knew, and Americans don't know because there's a wall of silence. Wall of silence. Beware. Website called If Americans Knew. Listen to the shocking reports. Over 100 Minnesota law enforcement officers attended a 2012 conference organized by the Israeli consulate in which Israeli police trained them. Israeli forces often use the knee on neck restraint on Palestinians. This was reported in the UK Morning Star newspaper. Officers from the U.S. police force responsible for the killing of George Floyd received training in restraint techniques and anti-terror tactics from Israeli law enforcement officers. Dear listeners, send me an email, abie@iafrica.com, and I will send you these articles, and it has all the pictures, the photographs, how to restrain the Palestinians, abie@iafrica.com. Whew, I'm so cross. Netanyahu said, this is a historic opportunity to annex the West Bank. The area that was supposed to be a Palestinian, or parts of it, supposed to be a Palestinian state. Netanyahu said, that this is a historic opportunity to annex the West Bank. What does he mean, historic opportunity? Huh? What does he mean by that? He means we have a great opportunity to do so because we have a dunce in the White House who is in our pocket and is our puppet to do as we say. That is no secret. So Israel is safe from Palestinian George Floyd stories doing any damage to its image. No stories of that. 71 years the Palestinians have had the Israeli knee on their necks. They can't breathe. They can't breathe. They are dying. The Reverend Al Sharpton, did you see him making his speech? He's like a sort of a Malcolm X, like a Farrakhanish type of character, like a Martin Luther King type. May you know. He made a speech at the funeral, brilliant speech at the funeral of George Floyd. It was brilliant, I tell you, about racism, about bigotry, about discrimination, about violence. It was stirring. It was powerful. And you know what? It really moved me. And then I wondered, what if Reverend Al Sharpton spoke to the world about the Palestinians in the way that he spoke about George Floyd? So I modified his speech a little, and this is what it would sound like if he made the speech, say, in Jerusalem. 32-year-old Iyad al-Halak, his story has been the story of Palestinian folks, because ever since 71 years ago, the reason we could never be who we wanted to be and dreamed to being is you kept your knee on our neck. We were smarter than the underfunded schools you put us in. But you had your knee on our neck. We could run corporations and not hustle in the street, but you had your knee on our neck. We had creative skills. We could do whatever anybody else could do, but we couldn't get your knee off our neck. What happened to Iyad happens every day in this country. In education, in health services, in every area of Palestinian life. It's time for us to stand up in Iyad's name and say, get your knee off our necks. The reason why we were marching in Gaza, we were like Razan, the paramedic. We couldn't breathe. Not because there was something wrong with our lungs, but that you wouldn't take your knee off our neck. We don't want no favors. Just get up off us and we can be and do whatever we can be. There have been protests all over the world sometimes for a short while. But the thing I want us to be real cognizant of is there's a difference between those calling for peace and those calling for quiet. Some of y'all don't want peace, you just want quiet. You just want us to shut up and suffer in silence. There's a God that still sits high, but he looks down low and he'll make a way out of no way. This God is still on the throne. Grieving, we can fight. I don't care who's in the White House or in the Knesset. There is another house that said, if we'll fight, he'll fight our battles. If we stand up, he'll hold us up. So as we leave here today, I say to this family of Iyad al-Halak, I know that years ago we told them, Reverend Jackson told us, keep hope alive. But I want you to know in my life there's times that I lost hope for the Palestinian people. Things can happen like this that will dash your hope. But there is something that is sister to hope called faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Faith is when you got a pile of bills and no money, but you say, he will provide all of my needs. Faith is when you got no medicine in the cabinet and you're sick in your body, but you say, he's a doctor that never lost a patient and he'll dry tears from my eyes. Faith is when your friends walk out, when your loved ones turn their backs, but you say, I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me now. We didn't come this far by luck. We didn't come this far by some fate. We come this far by faith, leaning on the Almighty, trusting in His holy word. He never will fail the Palestinians. He'll come a long way. God will. God shall. God will. God always has. There you are. Modification. of Reverend Al Sharpton's words at the funeral of George Floyd. What more can I say? My heart bleeds for George Floyd, and my heart bleeds, aches for the George Floyds of Palestine, the George Floyds of Myanmar, the Uyghurs George Floyds, the Somali George Floyds, the Afghan George Floyds, the Floyds of Yemen. And of course, we must never forget the George Floyd mentioned in Cyril Ramaphosa's speech. We must not forget the George Floyds of South Africa. Well, there you are. I feel so angry. But let me leave you now with the words of a Palestinian lady. And who is this Palestinian lady? She is Rafif Ziada, and he's a member of the steering committee of the Palestinian campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. Also a founding member of the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid, promoting the BDS campaign in the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, and an organizer of International Israeli Apartheid Week. Her debut CD, Hadil, is dedicated to Palestinian youth. So, I'm going to bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and listen to the words of Rafif Ziada.
At the time I said nothing, but then I wrote this poem for this young gentleman. اسمحوا لي أن أتكلم بلساني العربي قبل أن يحتلوا لغتي أيضا. Allow me to speak my Arab tongue before they occupy my language as well. Allow me to speak my mother tongue before they colonize her memory as well. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. All my grandfather ever wanted to do was wake up at dawn and watch my grandmother kneel and pray in a village hidden between Yaffa and Haifa. My mother was born under an olive tree on a soil they say is no longer mine, but I will cross their barriers, their checkpoints, their damn apartheid walls, and return to my homeland. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. And did you hear my sister screaming yesterday as she gave birth at a checkpoint with Israeli soldiers looking between her legs for their next demographic threat? Called her baby girl Janine. And did you hear Amne Muna screaming behind their prison bars as they tear gassed her cell, "We are returning to Palestine"? I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. But you tell me this woman side of me will only bring you your next terrorist. Beard-wearing, gun-waving, towel-head, sad nigger. You tell me I send my children out to die, but those are your copters, your F-16s, in our skies. And let's talk about this terrorism business for a second. Wasn't it the CIA that killed Allende and Lumumba? And who trained Osama in the first place? My grandparents didn't run around like clowns with white capes and white hoods on their heads lynching black people. An Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. So who's that brown woman screaming in a demonstration? Sorry, should I not scream? I forgot to be your every Orientalist dream. Genie in a bottle, belly dancer, harem girl, soft-spoken Arab woman. Yes, master. No, master. Thank you for the peanut butter sandwiches raining down on us from your F-16s, master. Yes, my liberators are here to kill my children and call them collateral damage. I am an Arab woman of color, and we come in all shades of anger. So let me just tell you, this woman side of me will only bring you your next rebel. She'll have a rock in one hand and a Palestinian flag in the other. I am an Arab woman of color. Beware, beware my anger.